Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
It's the New York Times best-selling author Mark Ebner. He's an award-winning investigative journalist, and he's covered all aspects of celebrity and crime culture, and you probably know him from Hollywood Interrupted. Thanks for being on the show today, Mark.
Hey, well, thank you. Well, I think we've hit our sweet spot here. It's true crime all the time, and I will add, we couldn't have landed on a better time for it, so I wish us both success.
Yeah. Well, certainly been good so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, you see what's happening with, American, the OJ series, a lot of these shows are getting play that, unimaginable play. I mean, you know, who thought the People versus OJ Simpson after all these years, when we all know how it all ends, so to speak, is, you know, capturing audiences all around the world. It's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, and it's quite a surprise. I think that a combination also of that making of a murderer too on Netflix.
Right.
I mean, it's just crazy how people are. It surprises me sometimes because they're shocked about how the legal system actually works.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, what a learning curve for me. I think to the point, Poison Candy, I did that with the, assistant state, attorney down there in, Palm Beach County, Florida, Elizabeth Parker. And when that story hit my desk via my agent, I said, oh yeah, I want to do this one. I mean, this is just, you know, first of all, it took place in Florida. And Florida is the gift that keeps giving when it comes to these wacky true crime stories. And this one definitely takes the cake. No question about it. You know, here you have, when we were pre-interviewing here before we went, before we started taping this show, I don't want to dance around certain issues. This is about Dahlia DiPolito, okay? Mm-hmm. This is a story that begins and ends with sex. This woman, I mean, you know, I did a Crime Watch Daily, that syndicated show, and they said that her intended victim, Mike DiPolito, who soon became her husband, and, you know, she plotted to kill him. You know, they said, he said that they met on a dating website. Well, that's not exactly true. She was an escort. You know, that's, you know, she's a, you know, a casualty of her own profession. You know, my feelings on prostitution notwithstanding, what I can say is that everything, and I repeat, everything about her, you know, begins and ends with sex. Sex was what she used to get what she wanted, you know, and she really honed that craft quite well, I gotta say. And, you know, we see how it wound up.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm ready to go back to Florida for round two.
Well, she actually got him married too, right? So, you know, when she was being his escort, she actually lured him and married him.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it was this is what happened. The guy's fresh out of prison. He did a couple of years on a, and the guy being Mike DiPolito, he did a couple of years on a, he was stealing money. You know, that's the only way to say it. The guy had a scheme. You know, he had experience coming up in, you know, he's an ex-drug addict. You know, very street-savvy kid from Philadelphia. You know, he came to Florida, the boiler room capital of the world, for God's sake. You know, and he learned from, you know, some of the best, I guess, you know, in terms of how to separate people from their cash. Well, you know, which is ironic because, you know, he didn't meet his match until he met Dahlia DiPolito, who did her best to succeed in separating him from all his cash as well. But the thing about him was that, you know, he did 2.5 years, he did his time. You know, he has a restitution clause in his release. The sad and ironic part about his sentencing was, yeah, he got out in a short amount of time, but he's doing 30 years, probation, federal pro, you know, where he's restricted to the county of Palm Beach, Florida. Now, that means that while his ex-wife Dahlia and the woman who conspired to murder him as was adjudicated in the court of law and wound up having her receive pretty near the maximum prison sentence of 20 years, she hasn't spent a day in prison, and she's been living less than 2 miles away from him in the same town. You know, but I like to say, you know, she's been suntanning in her mom's backyard with an ankle bracelet on, plotting her next move, you know, or her next victim. Because we're not talking about a normal person here, you know. I'll say she was an escort, but I didn't mean that to besmirch her, I'll leave it to the experts. I spoke to a court-affiliated forensic psychologist down there, when I was working on the book with Elizabeth Parker, who, to her credit, had done all the investigating, you know, to get to the point where she had a slam dunk prosecution on this woman. I talked to this guy, and the first words out of his mouth was, she's a sociopath. You know, so there's the clinical diagnosis. This woman is not of right mind. And she is consequently very, very dangerous.
And so why isn't she spending any time in prison?
Well, she, here's what happened. She got out on an appeal bond. I guess her mom or relatives put up some property or whatever. She's not, you know, I wouldn't say the woman's, you know, she's really wealthy, you know. But she managed to get an appeal bond, so she was out on appeal, and, you know, which is by law, you know, it wasn't a capital crime. Maybe it was. I don't want to misspeak here, but what, you know, as heinous as her crime was, Yeah, there wasn't a body involved, so I guess they let her out on an appeal bond. So she has all this time, and, you know, what she did was she managed to use whatever ironic celebrity she had to kind of lawyer up, you know, with some cowboys. It was some California, you know, show trial lawyer, you know, who flew into Florida to start representing her, blah, blah, blah. I guess a lot of these lawyers want TV time, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they managed to get her original conviction thrown out on a couple of technicalities, one involving voir dire and jury selection and the idea that, the defense wasn't allowed to ask certain prospective jurors if any of the pretrial publicity had, affected them or their decision-making process in any way. So there were a lot of screw-ups. Well, guess what? Surprise, it's Florida. You know, lawyers and cops down there are screwing up all the time in case no one hasn't, noticed. However, once again, it still leaves me head scratching that she hasn't done a day in prison, when the fact is that the case was airtight against her. Like they say, videotape doesn't lie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but what's she saying? She's saying, from what I heard, that she was just acting in a reality.
Well.
it wasn't real. It was for a reality TV or something.
Yeah, it was the reality show defense, which her, her original trial attorney, that's what he put out there, and it was pretty weak, It was like, it was the way things played out was kind of surreal, that the local police department decided that once they knew she was plotting to kill her husband for sure, from direct, eyewitness sort of evidence being brought before them by one of her lovers. She's married to Mike DiPolito, but you got to believe she had more than one side pieces, as it were, going on in her life. other than men that she could use. And, abuse without them even knowing it. This guy, who had an ongoing relationship with her, his name is Mohammed Shahada. He owns some convenience stores down there in Palm Beach County. And he also, he had actually been on television. He had appeared as a glorified extra, maybe in a couple of episodes of that show, Burn Notice. So there was this air of, drama around her life. But at the same time, this guy realized she was serious. She wanted to kill her husband, and she proved that to him on several occasions, blatantly. He went to the cops. And, he pretty much, let them run the show, and they signed him up as a confidential informant before he had a chance to think about it. And, then they're orchestrating this big sting on her. and the idea was that they were going to go along with the ruse. He was going to be wired, and it would also be videotaping, because most of their business took place in a car. And they were going to collect evidence to the point where the Boynton Beach Police Department took one of their own, an undercover cop by the name of Woody Jean, and had him pose as a hitman and actually have her have, get on tape her giving money to Mohammed Shahada to hire a hitman and purchase a weapon. They had this already. They could have, they would have had a strong case right there, because once money changed hands, with her, stating her objective, that should have been enough. But this is where we get into reality show territory. Boynton Beach police wanted to keep the drama going. They wanted to keep the ruse going because, well, yeah, the argument could be made that they would be strengthening their case. But really what it was they had some PR chick, Stephanie Slater's her name. Unbelievable that she's still employed by the department, the Boynton Beach Police Department in Florida. She's the PIO, the Public Information Officer. She's basically a spokesperson for them, you know, a flack, yeah, as it were. You know, she decided to, you know, that since Boynton Beach Police Department had invited the television show Cops to ride along on this extraordinary case, you know, and film, actually tape the sting operation, which had them eventually setting up a crime scene, supplying a fake hitman, and everything else to the designated date when this murder was supposed to take place, they let the hitman call the shots, and he said, I need you out of the house on this day at this time, and I need a key to your house, I need to be able to get in, blah, blah, blah. On the designated date where this alleged hit was supposed to go down, she cleans the house out of $80,000 worth of jewelry and almost everything that's of value to her, and she goes to the gym. She parks her car. She leaves all that stuff in her car. She gets a phone message from Boynton Beach Police Department Sergeant Ramsey, who's on the fake crime scene that they had set up. And he says, you know, Ms. DiBolito, I need to speak to you. She calls him minutes later, and she says, what's going on? And, you know, he's saying, listen, there's been an incident. You know, she's like, what happened? What happened? And he says, I need you to come here now. I need you to come home. She comes home to her condominium there in Boynton Beach that she shared with her intended victim, her husband, Michael DiBolito. She comes home. And the place is yellow taped off. There are cops posing as forensic investigators, dusting for fingerprints. They had already gotten Michael DiBolito out of the house. She walks up to Sergeant Ramsey, and she's like, well, you know, and he says, I'm sorry, your husband was shot. Your husband's been killed. You know, and before he gets the word shot and killed out of his mouth, she's breaking down like, you know, one of, you know, and, you know, if you watch that videotape, it's a thing of wonder,
yeah,
in terms of acting. You just don't know whether it's really, really bad or really, really good. And I suppose it depends who's watching. Well, the cops' cameras are watching. They're watching everything. So anyway, the point is that the police department pretty much screwed the pooch on their own credibility by allowing a videotape to go up. You know, of, you know, videotape that they had collected that was actually evidence. Now, in what planet? I can't, that to me was stupid in and of itself. You don't take evidentiary taped footage and put it up on YouTube just to show off for your police department. You know, this is the whole thing. You know, you're investigating a crime. Well, they did that, and, you know, so in terms of pre-trial publicity, you know, this videotape went viral right away. And so, you know, listen, I have my feelings about what kind of a woman Dottie DiBolito is, but at the same time, if you want to taint a jury pool, that's one way to do it.
And plus, you know, once it's on Nancy Grace, it's everywhere too, right?
Exactly.
Showing it over and over and over and talking about it and stuff. Do you think that's a problem with the whole justice system right now?
Well, I think that, you know, listen, I live in Los Angeles. You know, I cover Hollywood and crime and the intersection thereof. You know, that's that. And, you know, I've seen more show trials go south than, you know, you can imagine. I mean, you know, you go to OJ. You know, you go to, you know, anytime there's, you know, this, you know, basically what there is, there's just a lot of, you know, popcorn eating time and a lot of unnecessary drama that goes into these things. And it's manufactured by the people who are supposed to be doing their jobs and meeting out justice. And, you know, you see it all the time. And it's unfortunate. And hence, you know, her reality defense, you know, actually, it's sort of like, you know, you sit back and you go, how absurd is that? You know, she's saying that she was in a reality show, but was there a reality show company involved? No. Was there, you know, any working scripts or, you know, shoot dates or call sheets or all the things that go into production of these shows? There was none of that. It was all in her imagination, you know, for her to try and say that, you know, that, you know, she didn't mean anything she said or did, and she thought she was being filmed as in a reality show. Well, you know, we've reached a place in history where, sadly, that idea, that absurd sort of defense, doesn't seem that far-fetched. However, in this case, it was.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And do you think she's ever done this sort of thing before?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, there's no question that she's used men, you know, for her own ends. You know, prior to having, you got to understand, she didn't wake up one morning and say, I want to kill my husband. No. She had to first, in a span of, you know, 6 months, I mean, these two were newlyweds, she had to get his money first.
Yeah.
You know, the guy had a nest egg of about $240,000. And, you know, and understand, talk about scamming the scammer. This is a guy who, you know, had just gotten out of prison for defrauding people, you know, was getting defrauded by the person that he shared a bed with. She found ways to, you know, to create ruses to, A, get his money away from him, B, spend it on other guys who would help her with other enterprises that she may be considering or being involved with. And, you know, at the end of the day, the way she established those relations, like I said at the top, it all began and it ended with sex. Apparently, she was just incredible between the sheets. And, you know, men could not say no to her. And so, yeah, had she conspired to kill another person? I don't think so. But she certainly had used and abused men all of her adult life, her short adult life.
And now what is the husband, where is he now, and what's he kind of doing, and how's he react to all of this?
Well, you know, he's in a tough situation. He's got 30 years probation restricted to the county of Palm Beach, Florida. He's kind of imprisoned in his own town at the scene of the crime, as it were. You know, he's wanted to, you know, he went to prison for selling false foreign currency to people. You know, basically getting them on the phone and running a phone scam and taking their money. And he owed about, I think he owes like just under $200,000 in restitution. He has been trying to pay that restitution, but unfortunately, the probation people down there and law enforcement, they won't accept his money unless he proves to them where he got the money from. So in other words, it's a real catch-22 for him, you know. You know, he's hoping to get off probation and be able to expand his horizons and live his life, you know. Listen, you know, here's a guy who, you know, did his time. I understand why and how he became the person that he was when he had to go off to jail. He's no saint, but I'll tell you, his intentions are good. You know, especially, you know, when he found out that the main source of all his problems in this free world, breathing free air, you know, were coming from his wife. You know, he felt that, you know, justice had been served. She was out of his life. She was eventually going away for, you know, the better part of 20 years. And he could get on with his. That isn't the case. you know. So how he's doing, it's hard to say. But, you know, I can definitely say I wouldn't want to be in his shoes.
No, no. And I guess, so they have to do a whole new trial again, right?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because there are, you know, I would say more than a few levels of impropriety that can be pointed at by her defense team. But at the end of the day, I think the evidence will will out. If they can, you know, sequester a jury, you know, that hasn't been tainted, you know, by the media that we're creating right now.
Yeah.
Then I think, you know, what's going to happen is because the detectives involved managed to accumulate enough evidence for a conviction the first time, I see no reason why they won't be able to do it again. Like Elizabeth Parker says, you know, videotape doesn't lie. And it certainly wasn't lying in this case.
Right. And now that the husband testified in the first one, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that, you know, he took the stand, yeah. And, you know, there is so much stuff, you know, that didn't come out at trial. I mean, you got to understand, she had allegedly tried to poison him. She had tried to do it herself, you know. I mean, she planted drugs on his car, on his vehicle on numerous occasions, allegedly. You know, I mean, and I say that with my tongue embedded in my cheek. But you got to understand, her whole mission was to get her, once she had his money, was to get him out of her life. Whether it meant having him sent back to prison, or her end game was to have him, you know, have him disappear, have him killed. And she almost succeeded, didn't she?
Yeah, oh yeah. And she got actually the name of his place put in her name too, right? Like that.
Oh yeah, yeah. But now that was kind of ridiculous. Yeah, they went to a trust lawyer, I guess, or you know, someone who could handle the deed transfer, and he was like sitting there thinking to himself, "Well, you know, I don't understand why. You know, I'll take your $150 to do this deed transfer, but you know, when he did that." It should have been clear to both of them that she, even though that the deed is transferred into her name, she can never sell the place, you know, without permission of the original owner, being her husband, Mike. In other words...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
She She may have the deed. She may have a piece of paper, but does she own that house to the extent that she could, you know, sell it or profit from it? No. Not without his signature. He's the original owner, and that's the law in Florida. So it was, that was kind of stupid. You know, of course, you know, when she got arrested, he was like, I want my house back. You know, he was worried. Well, the truth of the matter is he had nothing to worry about, you know. But, like I said, she was, you know, trying everything, you know, to, you know, steal everything from this guy, including his life.
That's just crazy. And he didn't get it even when she tried to poison him before?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess the moral of that story is, you know, I don't want to sit here and call him a dumbass. It's easy to be a, excuse my language, it's easy to be, you know, an armchair sort of criminologist and say, wow, this guy was a complete sucker and a dupe. But then, again, I say to anybody who's thinking that and scratching their head over the whole thing, I say once again, do not ever underestimate the power of sex. It's incredibly powerful. And, you know, that is a career that she had. I mean, if there's anything she studied, she may not know about deed transfers and, you know, and reality TV, but she knows, you know, she knows how to exert power over men to the point of destroying them. She knows it well.
Wow. That's quite a story.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And now the book's out now, right?
Yeah, actually, it came out in 2014. It's enjoying a resurgence now. It was a tremendous learning curve for me. I had the advantage of working with the woman who prosecuted the case, a really good investigative prosecutor. And then I had all the files. I mean, it was like you couldn't have handed me a better story to be able to put my pen to, because, it was all there due to the, you know, investigative work of the prosecutor. I hope that the book sees further life. I encourage your listeners to pick up a copy, Poison Candy, The Murderous Madam, Dahlia DiPolito's Plot to Kill, is available on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, direct from the publisher, Ben Bella Books. You know, you can get that book anywhere. And, it's definitely some worthwhile reading, because no matter how much you think you know about this creature, Dahlia DiPolito, and what she managed to do within a six-month period, you know, to her husband, let that be a cautionary tale that everyone should read. You know, that's all I can say.
And so you come, you've been doing Hollywood Interrupted.
Hollywood Interrupted I did with the late, great Andrew Breitbart back in 2004, 2005. That was when, you know, our New York Times bestseller, and I only say that not to boast, but it is definitely something that, you know, any author should aspire to if they want to make their parents proud. You know, I think it means a lot more, to your legacy than it does at that exact moment when you hit that list. But yes, Hollywood Interrupted was a... our thesis was that celebrity is a disease, and that with Andrew Breitbart coming from the right and me coming from the left, we both met on the same page with our mutual loathing for Hollywood, and we decided to stage an intervention of sorts, and that's how we came up with Hollywood Interrupted and our laundry list of, you know, crazy, if not criminal, Hollywood behavior. And then after that, I struck out on my own and did a gnarly true crime book called 6 Degrees of Paris Hilton, which is available from Simon & Schuster. And then we did We Have Your Husband, which is a kidnapping case with the late Jane Garcia Valseca, who managed to get her husband, who had been kidnapped in Mexico, managed to get her husband back after he was literally imprisoned in a box buried under the ground for 6.5 months. That was made into a Lifetime movie of the same name, We Have Your Husband. And then I did went up to Canada and I did Being Uncle Charlie with Bob Deasy, a guy who in the OPP, which is, as you know, is Canada's version of the state police, had a, you know, illustrious 25-year career where he very rarely came out from being undercover. Consequently, he managed to take out down the Italian mafia, the Hells Angels, all sorts of drug dealers, you know, just some great, great stories. And he perfected something up in Canada, which is known as Mr. Big. Should I explain what Mr. Big is?
Yeah, because you can't leave us without explaining that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, well, Being Uncle Charlie, Random House Canada, a collaboration that I'm really proud of. Mr. Big is essentially where the undercover agent poses as, as the big criminal, the top dog, the gang leader, the top mafioso, if you will. And basically what he did was, and they use it to solve cold cases. And in this case, you know, it was a murder. And basically the way the Mr. Big operation works is he's all blinged out. He's got the gold chains and, you know, rented a suite at the Four Seasons. Meanwhile, him and his other undercovers had been nurturing this suspected murderer, you know, on the street, you know, to do their bidding, you know, so they would stage, you know, like a tractor trailer heist, you know, some crimes and have him involved with it, using their own money, their own vehicles and their own resources, you know. And so this low-level guy who they suspect of committing a cold case murder, you know, all of a sudden feels like he's moving up in the organization to the point where one day he's been summoned by Mr. Big and taken up to that hotel suite. And he sits down, he's nervous, he's meeting the Big Cheese. And the Big Cheese is actually our undercover guy, my co-author Bob Deasy, who says, you know, listen, you've been doing some great work for me out there. You know, I want you to be part of this thing of ours, if you will. You know, and the guy's getting excited. Oh my God, I'm moving up, this is great. And he says, listen, but, you know, I'll tell you, you're sitting up here with me. And I know that if you walk out that door and you hit the street and you get paced on the street, the first name you're going to give up is me. And the guy's like, oh, no, I'm not a rat, I'm not a rat. Yeah. And he says, yeah, shut up, you're a rat. Okay, we're all rats. But here's the thing. You're going to give me something of equal or greater value. You know who I am. You know what kind of operation we're running here. Now I got to hear something about you. And he had the guy confessing to that very murder inside of 15 minutes. And that's the Mr. Big scam in law enforcement in Canada. Down here they call it entrapment. But yeah. Up there, you know, it's a finely honed law enforcement tool. So anyway, that was a fun book. And, you know, just sitting here looking for my next one.
How do you find these? Like, these all seem very different in their subject. What leads you to them?
Well, a lot of times, you know, for books, a lot of time it's as simple as, something coming across my agent's desk that will get me involved with a collaboration. When I'm doing freelance crime stories, you know, basically I just have a good nose for them. It's well honed over the years. You know, I've been at this game for, you know, 3 decades now. And I have a pretty good sense about what makes for a good story. So, you know, I think it's a combination of my own wits and decent representation.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so now you're doing the website too, Hollywood Interrupted, aren't you? Or
yeah, you know, I mean, I have HollywoodInterrupted.com. It was basically a placeholder site. You know, I have broken some stories on there. Certainly the biggest one would be Bill Cosby. I'm not going to say I was the first,
no.
But I was certainly pretty early on in 2006. You know, I had on-the-record sources saying that they drugged him and raped him. I mean, that Bill Cosby, drugged and raped him. And I put it out there, and I was met with silence. Nobody wanted to go after Cosby. My own agent, I was at William Morris at the time. I floated the idea as a book, you know, and she started screaming at me. She was like, Ebner, do you realize Bill Cosby's been a client of ours for over five decades? And I'm like, so what? You know, I felt like Hannibal Buress must have felt when he just stood there like and said on stage, yeah, but he's a rapist. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the layers of complicity and protection became the real story. And, you know, here I sit scratching my head, you know, years later, you know, wondering why I still don't have a book deal.
Yeah.
No sour grapes. It's just, you know,
no.
It's classic.
Well, why didn't that break then? Like, what made it do it all of a sudden now in the last short time?
You know, what happened was that, honestly, Bill Cosby was just too big, you know? I mean, you know, I don't, you know, I had heard rumors, but, you know, once I had actual sources, multiple sources, you know, I did what a journalist is supposed to do. I ran with the story. I couldn't find an outlet for it, so I published it myself. Well, here we are in 2016. It was only last year that Daily Beast republished my story under, you know, I warned you about Bill Cosby. You know, so I think I got some juice off that, but, you know, juice is not what I want.
Right.
You know, if I had my druthers, I sit here, you know, some days scratching my head looking at a spreadsheet of now up over 60 Bill Cosby accusers, you know, all with similar stories. And if I had my druthers, I'd be interviewing all 60 of them. That's how I do my job. However, I don't do my job by just walking out the door and saying I'm going to, you know, travel, you know, all over the country meeting these women. You know, when the fact is I'm a professional, I need to get paid. This is the one story that, you know, somehow got away. And to try and figure out why it doesn't speak well for my profession now, does it?
No. No.
Yeah.
What do you think about that then? As a profession and as, you know, journalism and media in general nowadays, they take a lot of flack. What's your opinion?
Well, I have, you know, I sit here, just before we started the show, I was, entertaining a lead that some guy came to me, about a mysterious death of a local porn star, you know, and I was like, wow, you know, that's a juicy story. And and back in the day, I could pick up the phone, I could call Rolling Stone, Playboy, Maxim magazine, you know, any of those glossy, slick magazines. You know, and I'd be, I'd be bankrolled and, you know, be on a plane the next day in, you know, reporting the story. Well, journalism, as we know, is not what we knew it was.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. You know, we are deluged by, you know, viral videos, listicles, as they call them, and very, very little in-depth, you know, long-form journalism, and we're suffering for it. I mean, yeah, long form does exist, but basically it's a vanity section for these websites who realize that, you know what, if we're going to succeed, branding is everything, you know, SEO, this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, all of a sudden you have the media mechanism itself dictating how you're supposed to tell a story. and it's just not fun anymore, nor does it pay very well, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll stick to books, you know? I'll just stick to the super long form as long as that's a viable outlet and see what happens.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I appreciate talk radio. I mean, at least we can have a conversation and, you know, get an entire thought out to the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting harder and harder to do that with the printed word. And I'll tell you, in terms of checks and balances, you know, you saw what happened with the Panama Papers. You know, that monstrous leak of all those, you know, dignitaries, celebrities, politicians, you know, who have been, you know, squirreling billions of dollars away, you know, just literally bleeding their own countries. I mean, when you look at something like that, you know, hopefully that's a wake-up call that says, you know, there are good journalists out there. They had 400 journalists working on that, going through 11 million, you know, documents. I don't know how many terabytes, 2.6 terabytes worth of stuff. I mean, that's the kind of stuff I like to dig myself, you know, my teeth into. But, you know, and there are, and believe me, those kind of stories cross my desk every day. Not of that, not necessarily of that magnitude, but really great, profound stories. And the outlets just aren't there, you know? So, you know, it's kind of like I have to focus with a single-mindedness of purpose. I have to focus on the story that's in front of me, and if I have to bleed out 300, 400, 600 pages, that's just what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see how the market responds.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of the American public is not so much interested in that anymore. It seems to be they're all interested in the quick flash.
Yeah, well, and that's how they're being raised, and that's unfortunate. You know, you know, my sister's a school teacher, you know, and she pulls her hair out trying to get her kids to read, you know. Why would they read? They got Game Boys. They listen to me. I'm like, you know, anything I say that involves technology, I'm probably 8 generations behind, so I shouldn't be the one pontificating about that. But at the same time, it's like, you know, when we lose our written word, that means that in journalism and, you know, nonfiction, and we lose all sense of perspective, you know. Nobody's minding the story. And, you know, and then when these big leaks like the Panama Papers or Snowden or any of that stuff comes down, you know, the world is shocked, and I mean shocked. Look, how could have this been happening? And I'll say, well, it might have been stopped, you know, if... you know, if the right journalists had had the opportunity, were allowed the opportunity within the, you know, within the parameters of their profession to start investigating it in the first place. You know?
Yeah.
It's a strange world we live in.
Do you find there's any news organization or journalist organizations out there left now that are just doing that sort of work?
You know, I think anybody who's still, I don't want to slag any of my colleagues who are, you know, working at the wire services or, you know, cranking out news day in, day out, but I think it's just as frustrating for them as it is for me. You know, it's, you know, occasionally we'll see something good in the New Yorker. You know, Time Magazine still has it. But, my sweet spot was men's magazines, and they've all gone by the wayside. I hear Playboy is getting sold now.
Yeah.
You know, and that may be, you know, it may be too little too late on that one. I have no idea. You know, the goal is, you know, I think the art of storytelling is still there. You know, and, you know, let me just put it this way. From what I'm losing in terms of, you know, journalism gigs, I think that ultimately the story will prevail. And, you know, I've had some tastes of having my work exploited into ancillary markets, i.e., you know, movies and television and that sort of thing. And, you know, I think if anything's changed for me is, You know, and I'll be the first to admit it. When I'm putting the story together, I'm thinking about telling it, ways to tell it. And, and it also affects my writing, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm writing for, you know, ultimately for the payday, which is going to come, from publishing a piece, whether it's on my website, HollywoodInterrupted.com, or some magazine, or some website, or a book. Ultimately, I'm not paying my rent until some sort of deal is made where the real money comes in, and the real money still, and it's true to this day, comes from Hollywood. What they do with your work after that? Listen, if my refrigerator's full, my rent is paid, and my wife and I can take a vacation in August, then so be it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
but, you know, I'm looking to other media is really where it's at.
Yeah. Is there anybody that inspires you right now?
I would have to say Gates Alix. This is a senior man of letters. He's taken some heat. He's been called a sexist because he publicly said that no woman writer has ever inspired him. I heard he's walked that back. But, you know, I don't find that to be sexist. I just think it sounds like a guy who maybe doesn't read all that much. He's too busy writing great stories and books. You know, he has a piece, I'm trying to remember the title of it. It's about a voyeur that he had met in the 60s. It's in the current issue. You can find it online in The New Yorker. A guy who, to satisfy his voyeuristic tendencies, bought a hotel in Aurora, Colorado, of all places, and created a way to spy on the people that checked into his hotel from the rafters without them knowing he was being watched. And he called himself, he felt like he was like an anthropologist, you know, and he took notes on their sexual proclivities and their grooming habits and everything else. And he had been doing this for years, and he basically became all consumed by his own sort of fetish. And he approached Gates Alix, and he shared with him the volumes of notes that he had taken, and even invited him to visit the hotel. But he wanted anonymity. He didn't want him to mention his name. So Gates Alix waited all these years. And finally, when this guy's like 78 years old, he finally said, you know what, go public. So this story that he'd been sitting on, you know, for decades is finally out. And if I remember the title, I know voyeur's in the title. Oh, you know, it's a Google search away. It would be Gates Alix, T-A-L-E-S-E, voyeur, and New Yorker. And that story will come up, and you say goodbye to your afternoon, because I've just sent you down the rabbit hole of some really good reading.
Well, we'll look for that. So yeah. Any idea what's coming up next for you, or you just haven't decided?
Well, you know, I've been doing working on a couple of projects. I can't discuss them yet until they go to the marketplace. So I've been working on two potential book projects. I've been working on a crime show, which I wish I could talk about right now. The network has to give us an air date. They gave us a budget. It's a crime show. It's a lot of fun. It would be on one of the cable networks. I'm functioning as a consulting producer. It really ties in with America's current fascination with a lot of these bygone crimes, i.e., well, if you thought, let's put it this way, if you thought O.J. was the show trial of the century, well, you'd probably be right. Let's not forget Robert Blake. Right. Let's not forget Phil Spector. You know, let's not even forget Winona Ryder. You know, I mean, in other words, we're going across the board in a lot of, fresh ways to look at old crimes. And I'm having fun with it.
Yeah. No, that sounds really interesting. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I'm staying busy. Yeah. You know, and I live in Southern California. I got no business complaining.
No. Except for you need a little extra water.
Yeah.
Okay.
You will get it.
Yeah. So let's give out your contact information one more time if anybody has something.
Okay, listen, any of your listeners are welcome to contact me directly. This may seem rare, but when you live in an age of no privacy, you might as well hide in plain sight. I can be reached directly by anyone interested at markebner59@gmail.com. My website is another place to go, noodle around, www.hollywoodinterrupted.com. And to the point of our conversation, it's never too late to have a look at Poison Candy. And, you know, that's available everywhere. So, you know, I thank you for the time. I really enjoyed speaking with you today, Al.
Yeah.
And, you know, anybody's welcome to contact me, and let's do it sometime again soon, shall we?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks for being on. Yeah.
Oh, great. My pleasure, Al. Take care.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.